Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and we are thrilled to have in studio with us today Mariah Ring. She is the site supervisor of the Leduc Historic Estate in Hastings, and I'm so happy to see you in the new year. How have you been?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So you've been coming off of all the great events that went on over the holiday season at the Leduc. Tell us, kind of give us a recap. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so we didn't have a lot going on in November, but in December we had both of our Victorian holiday teas.
Fancy.
Yes, and those were a lot of fun. We actually normally have one the weekend after Thanksgiving, but this year we decided to push them back because we wanted to see if it was a little easier for people to be able to come because it wasn't so close to the Thanksgiving holiday.
Sure.
And that went really well. We actually sold out both events, which was awesome.
So you might do that again. Is that your new schedule maybe?
Yes. Okay. I think that's going to be the new schedule. And then we did have the house open for holiday tours this year, which was a lot of fun, so people could come and see the house decorated for the holiday season.
Let's talk about how you decorated for the holiday season, because it really is period, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we have Christmas trees up, and they're all decorated with handmade or period pieces. So there's wooden ornaments. We also have crocheted ornaments and paper ornaments and little wooden toys and things like that, all things that you would have seen during the Victorian time period. And then we also have garland everywhere and pine boughs and sprigs and pine cones. And so it's all sorts of natural looking decorations. There's no holiday lights because they didn't have lighted Christmas trees
during that time period. Would they have put candles on their trees? Or
they did, actually. Okay. Yeah. So candles was something that was very prevalent on Christmas trees at that time period. If you were really wealthy, you actually had a servant that you would pay just to sit by the tree with either a bucket of water or sand in case it lit on fire. But we do put our trees up too early in comparison to the Victorian time period too. So I know a lot of people love to put their trees up early, some people as early as soon as Halloween's over or right after Thanksgiving. But typically in the Victorian time period, they didn't put their Christmas trees up until Christmas Eve. And then they took them down in January after the 12 days of Christmas. So it was really common for them to not go out and get a tree until that time. So it wouldn't have been a very dry tree to put candles on. So it was less likely to catch on fire, but still not impossible.
So you had how many trees in the house?
We had three trees in the house, three like tall trees. And then there are lots of little Christmas trees that we put around the house too. So tree in the traditional sense, three. And then we had probably close to 20 different small trees scattered about the house.
Where do you find your decorations?
A lot of them we just have. They were either donated to us or they were made at some point or purchased closer to when the house first opened. So we don't typically go hunting for them. We do have some people who have donated some Victorian ornaments and things like that. So we get them in various ways, but I haven't yet gone shopping myself for any sort of Christmas decoration for the house.
Oh, I bet it was just so fun.
It really was.
So yeah. Special.
Yeah, it was really nice. And it's just fun to see the house that way. And mm-hmm. It looks so festive and sort of homey. And I actually just finished taking down all of the decorations last week. And it just looks bare. It's almost sad. And that house
and
is beautiful.
Not bare. Yeah.
No, and it's not bare at all. But without all the garland and things, it almost looks that way.
Oh, how fun, though. Yeah. So lots of people got to enjoy it.
Yeah, we would have liked to have seen some more people, but the weather didn't always cooperate, and we only had limited days. So actually next year, we're looking at decorating the house even earlier and opening it up for a couple dates in November as well as December.
For the tours.
Exactly.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
nice.
So that people can come through and see. And we can talk about Thanksgiving and things too, especially because Thanksgiving didn't become a national holiday until during the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln's actually the one who really signed it in as a national holiday. So we can interpret that too, which is a lot of fun.
And the house would be decorated for that, you think?
I think we would have some harvest decorations up and things it might be harder to flip the house entirely, but I think we could do it. I think we would just decorate for the holidays earlier so that people who are coming into town for Thanksgiving can see it decorated for that period of time.
Don't you think it would be amazing to have lived back then and think of spending Christmas Eve decorating your tree?
Oh, it would have been so much fun. Yeah.
But a lot of work.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Especially to just leave it up for the 12 days afterwards. But, you know, it was different. You didn't necessarily want to have it up for as long. The tree gets dry, things like that. All things that we deal with now, of course. But it's funny to know that, like, our presents go underneath a decorated tree, and they would have been decorating their tree and oftentimes hanging presents on the tree sometimes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. How fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
So you did have some time off over the holidays.
I did. I did have some time off, so I wasn't there the whole time. We did have some holiday party rentals and things that
that's fun.
People had. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We had the Hastings hockey teams come for a breakfast right after Christmas. That was really cool, and I think they enjoyed it a lot. And so we were doing things, but I did sneak some time off in there.
That's great. So yeah. Now we are into January, and what are some of the things that you are focusing on?
Well, we have some events coming up. We have Burns Night this weekend. We also have
what's it called?
The Burns Night Scotch Tasting.
Okay.
We only have like 2 spots left for that, though, but we have that this weekend. We have the Valentine's Tea coming up in February. We have a presentation in March, and we have our Mother's Day Tea in May, and then different programs that we're looking at adding before it gets too close to summertime, so people have some time to plan.
So tell us about the Valentine's Tea. And Valentine's Day, I know, is on a Friday this year. When is your tea?
It is. Ours is actually the Saturday before, so it will be on February 8th, still at the normal time, 3:30 to 5:30, and we'll have chocolate as a feature like we did last year, and different presentation about family love letters and things like that for people to look forward to. We actually already have people registering for it too, which is really exciting.
Wonderful. And how do the people go about doing that?
They can either go online to dakotahistory.org and find it on our events page. They can click on the LaDuc page as well and find it under LaDuc events and still register through it. Or they can go to Facebook and click the link through that. Or they can call me at the house, which is 651-438-8480.
How fun.
And register. Yeah.
So you have people already excited about that. Is it couples thing? Is a husband and wife thing? Boyfriend, girlfriend thing?
It's really whoever wants to come. Okay. We have some couples coming. We have some people bringing their grandchildren. It's just sort of a fun afternoon tea. And then we do talk about the holiday.
And if you don't like tea, is that a problem?
Typically, we would have water for you to drink.
Okay, perfect.
We really only serve tea. We could really make accommodations if you absolutely did not like tea, but it is sort of the feature of the event.
It's called a tea.
Yes, exactly.
How fun. That'll be really nice for people to look forward to.
Yeah.
And then tell us about your scotch tastings. How many times a year do you do those?
We just do one.
Oh, wow. So no wonder it's almost sold out.
Yes, exactly. So we just do the one in January. We are looking at maybe adding another one. It could actually be in July. And that's because we could do 2 Burns Nights then and still keep it sort of connected in that way. Robert Burns, his friends initially started celebrating his birthday and his life in July because that's when they thought his birthday was. But it turns out it's in January.
What?
Which I also think is funny because if my friends were like, oh, yeah, Ryan, we thought your birthday was this date and it was roughly 6 months.
You might have corrected them.
I might have, but I also might have been, were we really that close? So I think it's kind of funny, but we could look at then adding one in July. So we're
so what's the tie-in then with Burns and the LaDuc?
It's a little bit of a looser tie-in, but they did enjoy his poetry, and they did have a few of his books in their library, and so we do know that they did read his poetry. It's also just sort of a fun connection and a way to get to celebrate that part of cultural history, as well as tying it into things that the LaDukes would have enjoyed. We typically do it on Friday, but last year, Friday was Burns Night. It was January 25th, and this year, January 25th is a Saturday, and we can still do it then on Burns Night. So we decided to shift it one day and do it on Saturday.
How fun.
Yeah.
Good. So what else is going on, please?
We also will have a presentation in March. It'll be on March 13th. And it's called Immoral or Incorrigible, The Historical Silencing of Adolescent Girls. And this is with an author who, her name is Sheila O'Connor, and she wrote a novel that is based on fact, so it's sort of a historical fiction, about the incarceration of adolescent girls during the early part of the 20th century for immoral or incorrigible behavior. Typically, these were girls who got pregnant out of wedlock for various different reasons, and they were incarcerated at the Minnesota Home School for Girls in Sauk Center, Minnesota. So it is a Minnesota history, and this is something that went on across the country. It also was happening abroad. There's that movie Philomena, if anybody's ever heard about it, about a girl who had been incarcerated and her child taken away, and it was really not a great place for them to be. And so she wrote this book about it and this interesting piece of Minnesota history and Minnesota women's history. So we'll be featuring it in Women's History Month in March at the LaDuke. And I know we have talked too about having her speak on the show. So hopefully in February, we'll be doing an interview with the three of us.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So I wonder how she got interested in this topic.
Yeah. So actually, she was researching the history of her mother's biological family and discovered that her biological grandmother had potentially been incarcerated in one of these places. And she did some more research and found out that this was true. So a lot of the facts in her book are based on her own grandmother. And the story is really supposed to be about her grandmother in a lot of ways, but in more of a fictional telling and based on other documents and things that she found about other girls around that time. So she could sort of piece together a story of what her grandmother's life might have been like.
And when you say girls, what is the age of this, do you think, that you were talking about?
Think like anyone who is of childbearing age. So it could be anywhere from 9 to 17, really, in a lot of cases. A lot of times they were in their young teens and things like that, but it really just depended on the situation and the family and if they were sent away. And
were the babies taken away from them?
Oftentimes, yes. There was like state-mandated breastfeeding that went on so that the babies could have that, and then they were placed in homes, and these girls most often were then made domestic servants in local homes, oftentimes running away to try to escape this lifestyle.
Gosh, I hope that we can put that other interview together. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I think it really will be. And the book is very good. I just finished it, so I really think everybody should read it.
Tell us the name again.
Of course. Evidence of V, A Novel in Fragments, Facts, and Fictions. And you can get it at the library, too, so it's a great place to go.
Great. It is a great place to go.
Yeah.
I like the price at the library.
Me too. Yes. The prices are unbeatable.
Yes, they are. Yes. So I know that we're in the middle of winter. What does it cost to heat the LaDuke?
You know, I really don't know.
Good for you.
Yes.
Because it might frighten us both, right?
I think so. Yeah, it's definitely heated, which is nice.
Right.
Some of it is radiant heat and some of it is through the furnace and the vents. But I can attest to the fact that it's still pretty chilly there.
So it's probably not a super well insulated house?
No, not necessarily. And a lot of the windows are the original windows, so it's pretty drafty. And where my office is, it actually has three exterior walls and three windows on it. So it gets pretty chilly in there. I work a lot with a blanket, but there are rooms in the house that are warmer. So sometimes I will just bring some paperwork into that room.
Yeah.
Or there's a radiator in the hallway that keeps it very warm.
Nice.
So I make frequent trips down to refill a water bottle or get a cup of tea or something. just to stand next to it for a little while. But it's not unpleasant to work there. I'm just a freeze baby sometimes.
Did the LeDucs always have indoor plumbing?
They did not. No, okay. They didn't always have indoor plumbing, nor was it always electrified.
Oh.
So that didn't happen until about 1915 when William LeDuc got an inheritance from a former business partner's widow. Then he electrified and plumbed the house. And it was also around that time where they installed the first furnace in the home. So they did have like a wood burning stove and some coal that was done at one point. They also had fireplaces throughout the house, but the furnace was actually installed in the attic around that time period. And it was around that time too where the furnace actually caught fire and luckily did not lead to any major damage in the house. They were able to put it out pretty quickly. But yeah, so they did not have running water. They had to haul the water and heat it and use it for that.
So the bedrooms are all upstairs, right?
Yes, the bedrooms are all on the second
floor.
And
do they have fireplaces in them?
They do, all but one of them. So the room that is our office now was Florence's bedroom. And we have this great report that was done by Carol Zelli. And she wrote a report all about the house and the different things that they found for the Minnesota Historical Society. And it talks about how the bedroom that is now the office did not have a fireplace initially. Then at one point one may have been installed, but there isn't one in that room now. So it's the only room that really doesn't have one, but it also was above the kitchen, so it may have been warm enough in the winter months.
Wow.
Yes.
So fun.
I know, it's a lot of fun.
I bet it is. Well, we look forward to hearing more about some of these other things that are going on, and we're grateful that you came in today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Our guest is Mariah Ring, and is the house open now if people wanted to stop in?
It's not open now. We're in the off season, but if there is a desire for a group tour, if you have some people you'd like to bring by, you can call me and schedule a group tour. Also, I do open the gift shop if people would like to call ahead and take a look around the gift shop and purchase a few things. We had a couple people do that for holiday presents and things. So
nice.
Yeah.
Good. Great to see you.
You too.
And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.